The pressure's on for Jack to boost ticket sales for the South Georgia State Fair, and it doesn't leave him with a lot of time for much else. Meanwhile, Rooster's being scouted by Charlie Gully, Stacy's feeling neglected, and Ace and Wild Bill try their hand at apologizing. We're talking Heels Season 1, Episode 6 on Pro Wrestling Repackaged. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Chris.
And my name is Tessa.
And this is Pro Wrestling Repackaged, where the squared circle meets the small screen. In this episode, we will be discussing Heels Season 1, Episode 6, House Show. Before we dive into that, just a quick programming note for all the listeners out there. There is no new episode of Heels this coming Sunday. Episode 7 will be airing on October 3rd. So yes, we will have to wait an extra week to see what shakes out, but fear not, it'll be here sooner than we think. This whole show has kind of just been moving along at a good clip. I guess that's what happens when you only have 8 episodes to tell a story.
But they are pretty long episodes.
That's true. It can feel a bit much to watch these episodes twice before we record with how long they are. But be that as it may, we do it for the love of the show. And you know what else we do for the love of the show and for the love of the listeners? What we are going to start doing, if we can, if we have the feedback to do it, is we're going to start doing some listener feedback on the show. This is something we've been wanting to do for a little while. Fortunately, thanks to a few new listeners, we've actually gotten some thoughts on some of the episodes. And in this episode, we have some feedback about the prior episode, episode 5, as well as episode 6, the episode we're talking about today. So what we're going to do is we are going to read out the feedback about episode 5 right now. And then after we do our review, we will read out the feedback about episode 6. And if you want to participate in this, if you want to have your feedback read, any thoughts at all about Heels, the show, our podcast, anything you would like us to read on the show, you can email us at pwrepackaged@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Twitter at pwrepackaged. So we go first to @OllieJSpade on Twitter, who has just been a superstar interacting with us, sending us feedback, sending us thoughts about the show. And here's what OllieJSpade writes. Really enjoyed the new episode. Everything you guys said was just spot on and made me think a little differently than I did before, as I'm not too educated about wrestling. So I like how you said Crystal saved them from the promos they had. As a Crystal fan, I thought it was bad from the start, but to see it from a wrestling standpoint where she's a heel valet, so the audience is already against her, and by switching her to Bobby, who's a face, trying to turn them against her wouldn't make sense anyway. You know, that is a great point, and that's something that I think we really like to do, is to kind of fill in the blanks for those who watch the show but aren't familiar with wrestling. So glad to hear that. Back to the feedback. But like you said, with Ace, a lot of it is personal. So I think the bad script writing and inconsistency there is really from the root of the issue. Ace. He doesn't want Crystal as his valet, and he wants to humiliate her as far as trying to squeeze his own roast when rehearsing with Jack. He wanted the audience against her. And aside from that, I honestly interpreted Jack changing the script he had for Crystal less about protecting Ace and more about upholding his promise of including Ace to get him to stay at DWL at the end of 102. He needs to keep Ace on his leash, even at the expense of other people like Crystal. Because I can't even imagine how Ace would retaliate if Jack actually stood his ground on Crystal by saying no on changing valets. And that's why, even when he thought Crystal's promo at the beginning of the episode was really fucking good, he cut it because man-child Ace didn't like it. Overall, I really enjoy your guys' commentary. It's very detailed and validating to hear you respond to characters or storylines similar to me. So along with being excited for new Heels episodes, I'm excited for yours as well. Well, thank you so much, OllieJSpade. We really appreciate that. And we're excited, honestly, to hear what you think of these episodes as well, because we love how you've been kind of lighting us up with these great takes and these callbacks and these details from other episodes that even we had missed. And we cover this on the podcast. So yeah, Tessa, what do you think about what OllieJSpade said here?
I'm on board with pretty much everything. I think the only thing that I'm kind of iffy on is about Jack and the script. I think that protecting Ace and including Ace are kind of the same thing in this scenario. He's cutting things out and he's going along with everything he says because, again, Ace is a man-child. So yeah, he's still trying to include Ace in the creative decisions, but he's doing that to coddle him and baby him.
So absolutely.
I think it all, I don't think it's like two separate things. I think they're exactly the same.
Absolutely. And as far as how Ace would retaliate if Jack actually stood his ground on anything, you know, not just in this last episode, mm-hmm. we see how Ace retaliates against things. He right. hurts people for real.
Well, and Jack kind of does similar things. I mean, he screwed Ace in the first place, so he'll go off script too. So they're two peas in a pod.
Right. I think the difference is that Jack knew where to draw the line and where to stop. Right. And that was just sending a message, whereas Ace actually lost control
right.
of his actions. But also retaliating against Bobby by keying his car. Little yes. things like that, that we see Ace is very capable of. He's capable of going there when he senses a threat.
He's just a big baby. He's the worst.
He really is.
And I'm glad that, you know, we're seeing like Ollie J. Spade not coddling him the way I feel like a lot of fans are just immediately like, oh, but he's got this, and this going on. No, he's fucking up.
Well, how much of that has to do with how attractive they find him? I mean, Charlie Gully was talking about that with Rooster. And it's very true, you know, but a lot of people are willing to give Ace the pass, and we are not.
Yeah,
that's not what we do here.
No, Crystal Defense Squad all the way. Crystal and Bobby Defense Squad all of the way.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you, Ollie J. Spade, for that feedback. And we mentioned off the top how you can give us your feedback. But again, DM us at PWRepackaged, email us PWRepackaged@gmail.com. We are going to get to some more feedback later in the episode about episode 6. And with that, I think we should just dive in here to Heels season 1, episode 6, House Show, directed by Peter Siegel and written by Michael Waldron, the dream team here. Seems like they're just tag teaming on every episode here.
Either that or IMDb just doesn't update properly.
Right. Tessa, what happened in this episode?
So here, it's the day of Big Jim's baby's baptism, which brings, theoretically, a new beginning for everyone in Duffy. But Jack has other things to do. He's running around town, prepping and promoting the upcoming match at the fair.
It was great to see Big Jim again. I missed that guy.
You know, I saw somebody say that they, from the first episode, thought Bobby Pin and Big Jim were the same guy because they kind of have the same hair.
Yeah.
It's that black hair. What Big Jim wore in the first episode, Bobby Pin's kind of wearing something really similar now.
Well, Bobby Pin is kind of like the young Big Jim.
Yeah.
You put the two of them together and it's like, don't talk to me or my son ever again type of vibes. Like, it's like the kind of, you just need one more. You need like an older version to complete like the Darby, CM Punk and Sting like timeline of evolution of the
business.
Get
someone's dad in here.
Get Big Jim's dad. Get Bigger Jim. But yeah, it was nice to see him. And you know, I think we both agree that this is a more character-centric episode. No action. It's kind of the even episodes, they're more character-based. There's not a lot of action. And I think that's kind of how we'll break this episode down, not by just kind of the different stories, because it's really more just about where each individual character is at this point. And not every single character has something to do, but I was impressed this episode that we got some more movement from characters like Apocalypse and Diego, just that great scene of him and them in the locker room talking about men's nipples and war and religion and all kinds of stuff. So I came away from this episode really liking a lot of it. And I also came away from this episode just completely frustrated at where they are taking the Ace story and the Crystal story.
Yeah, the bulk of it I really enjoyed, but Ace is just really, look, I haven't forgiven him. Everyone else might forgive him. I haven't forgiven him. He needs to do a lot more. But I did really love the Wild Bill aspect of this episode. I think that really saved it for me. I really liked seeing what he gets, what Chris Bauer gets to perform in this episode.
Yes, Wild Bill was great in this episode. Well, I won't say Wild Bill was great. I'd say Chris Bauer was great. And Wild Bill was actually, for the first time, I kind of felt some empathy for him there. And, you know, Willie as well. I've kind of come around on Willie. And I think this was the episode that solidified it to where I'm now someone who can empathize with her as well. And not that wasn't the case early on. She was kind of like sandpaper to me. And I just kind of wanted to stay away from it.
She's still mean to Crystal. But
But mean in kind of a way that she accepts her, whereas before she didn't accept her. And I think we saw the tide turn on that, which I'm glad, because it's something that really makes me feel, you know, like the Crystal character has had some sort of positive momentum, even though there's a big setback, I feel, in this episode. But let's get into it. Let's start, though, with the dictator, as Rooster called him. Let's start with the man that we all have to bow down to, as Willie was alluding to. Let's start with Jack Spade in this episode, because he's facing pressure from a lot of angles. He's facing pressure from Willie. He's facing pressure from the Georgia State Fair people. He's facing pressure from his wife, even. So this man just can't catch a break.
Well, he kind of puts that on himself. So we first see Jack, he's getting a voicemail from the people at the state fair, and they're talking about how the ticket sales aren't doing what they should be doing. They're not what they were last year. What can you do about it? So he's got this pressure on him to get more people to buy tickets to come, not just see his wrestling show, but to see the fair in general. But to do so, he once again has to sacrifice this time with his friends and family. So you see, you know, Stacy's getting on him like, you can't be late to this baptism. It's been on your calendar. Where are you going? What are you doing? Well, he kind of forgot about it, as usual. He's forgetting about the important things because he's got probably what he personally considers more important things to focus on.
The Who rest wants to go to a baptism?
Yeah,
though?
I've never been to one.
They're lucky. They're boring.
It sounds boring.
I side with Jack on this one. Anytime you can get out of church, I say, you do that. He's an adult. Let him do what he wants. Shut up, Stacy. You only want him to hear your stupid song. That's all you want. That's all you care about.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into Stacy in a bit. But yeah, she just wants them to spend more time together, allegedly, as a family. But he's got Wild Bill to think about. He's got a podcast interview coming up. And those are more important than one of his closest friends' baby's baptisms.
Yes, the podcast interview with Dick Valentino, played by Mick Foley. And let's just talk about this right now, because I thought Mick Foley being in this show was kind of a thing where, when I heard he was going to be in this show, it was kind of like, oh, and also Mick Foley will be in the show. I was like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. I mean, I know CM Punk was really advertised as being a character on this show, and that was something that turned a lot of heads, but Mick Foley as well. This is a whole different thing for Mick Foley. He's been in some comedy situations before, you know, on Boy Meets World and the Big Show show, but Mick Foley in kind of like a serious drama show. That's interesting to me, because we know that Mick Foley is very strong in the character department, in the storytelling department. He's one of the best storytellers, I think, on the mic, in the ring, of the last several decades. And this really had me intrigued, and I didn't know what his role would be, but I think it's kind of a natural role as well. It's for him to be a former wrestler, basically just Mick Foley hosting a podcast.
Yeah, and I think this role, as brief as it is, fits him a lot better than his previous acting endeavors have. Even when he was playing himself on the Big Show show, he's pretty strong here for as brief as it is.
It's a natural role because Mick Foley himself is in that slot where he could very well be hosting a podcast, you know, bringing on younger talent and kind of expose them to an audience that grew up watching him, which is what we see a lot of, you know, older wrestlers, veteran wrestlers at this point doing. Although Mick Foley in real life is not one who has his own podcast. And that's one that we've talked about where it's a no-brainer that this guy would have. I mean, look at all the books he's written. He wrote 4 books. I've read them all. They're, you know, especially the first few are some of the best wrestling books I've ever read. And I've always enjoyed hearing him just tell stories about different points of his career. So I feel like maybe this planted a seed for Mick Foley. Maybe he'll actually start a podcast in real life.
Well, you know, we recently watched Celebrity Wife Swap with Mick Foley. So I'm wondering if his environment isn't the best for recording a podcast.
I don't know. I mean, you got to figure that some of those kids are at least out of the house by now. And Mick Foley, I mean, the guy's got enough money that he could just kind of build his own podcast studio. I mean, he's not like Jermaine Jackson, where, as we saw in his episode of Celebrity Wife Swap, he just got clothes all over his entire house and he has nowhere to do anything.
No, Mick just had dog poop.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, Jermaine stepped in it too. So
oh, yeah.
Not Mick Foley's dog poop, but.
Yeah, they weren't on the same episode.
Yeah, but imagine if they were.
That would have been funny.
What if Jermaine Jackson and Mick Foley swapped wives?
Imagine Jermaine in Mick's house, though. You'd have to do the opposite. You'd have to do husband swap.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought it elevated the episode. I thought it gave it that little bit of extra sizzle that I feel like this week, with it being such a character-focused episode, sometimes, those episodes don't hit the heights that the wrestling-centric episodes do. But this, I thought, was a great touch to have Mick Foley in here. Dickie Valentino.
What a name.
Yeah, what a name for a veteran wrestler like Mick Foley. But Jack, I mean, much like Stephen Amell, storming out of podcast interviews.
Yikes. This is done on purpose?
I don't think so. No. I mean, to be fair to Stephen, he had a panic attack that one time. He walked out of a podcast interview with Michael Rosenbaum. So this was a very different thing. This was just Jack being a stubborn jerk.
Yeah, he's really annoying on this podcast. Dickie's trying to give him a chance here to promote the fair and promote the DWL in general. But Jack's incredibly vague. He won't say who's in the main event, even though it's obvious based on his conversation with Willie just prior to this that he kind of has no choice but to put Wild Bill in. And you have to imagine Ace is going to be there because, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter if you really injure someone down in Duffy. You're still main event status. But he also, what prompts him to just walk out, storm out like a baby, much like Ace, is Dickie tries to ask him about his father and his father's death. And Jack just, he doesn't flip out per se, but he won't stay for it.
He's under no obligation to talk about his father or his father's death on a podcast. Like, I feel like that's not unreasonable, but just how he's treating the whole situation regarding Ace and Wild Bill and everything like that, it's like, well, then maybe tell him no. Maybe don't do a podcast if you're not going to say anything.
And he tells them that he's listened to the podcast in the past because what this podcast is about, what's it called? No Holds Barred or something?
No Questions Barred.
No Questions Barred. So he should know going into this that he's probably going to get some questions like this, some tough questions. It's only been a year since his father died. He's probably never really talked about it anywhere. That's kind of probably assumed that it would be asked. So he should have gone into it.
No, mm-mm. I would assume that Dickie Valentino, if he were any kind of good broadcaster or podcaster, would run that question by Jack before recording.
Well, did he run any question by him? Because Jack didn't want to answer anything.
Well, when you have a kind of a sensitive topic, it's probably best to, I mean, as the professionals do in the business, run these things by your guest beforehand. This way you avoid any awkward situations like this one here.
Well,
it just makes everyone look bad.
Yeah, and well, he says if he was going to be late to the podcast recording that Dickie would trash him to his listeners. So I wonder if walking out is going to lead to
I can only imagine. You can only imagine. I mean, that's the thing though. Dickie Valentino looks bad because he pressured Jack to talk about a situation that he is not ready to talk about in public and may never be ready to talk about in public. And Jack looks bad because he was giving non-answers the entire time
right. And
just kind of trying to deflect and then stormed out. So I don't even think they air that.
Oh, honestly. I imagine they wouldn't.
I'd can it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they didn't get anything out of him. They got probably like 5 minutes of him just saying, well, I'm going to be at the fair.
Yeah.
So come see me.
I got the belt. I'll be the main event.
Nobody cares about
this,
you.
This is what Jack missed the baptism for. This is what got Stacy all upset at him.
Yeah.
Was it worth it? I don't think so.
No, probably not.
Well, let's move from one unprofessional spade to the next. We move from Jack over to Ace. Sorry. That just slipped.
So when we get to Ace, we start seeing more of actually their dad, Tom. So when we first see him, Ace is spending time at home watching some old home movies where his dad is watching him play football. I think it's at his birthday party. He's playing football with his friends in the backyard. And his dad's telling him he's going to be a star. He's going to be I don't know football positions, but it was something football, football related for the Bulldogs or something. But he's also fueling this rivalry between Ace and Jack because he's being mean to Jack in this footage, saying that Ace is better than him. So you get this sense that, again, Tom Spade probably wasn't the best person in the whole world.
Well, we have here a young Jack, played by Jackson McCann, and a young Ace, played by Mason Gillette. What did we think of these young portrayals of the brothers? Because I thought I could see, like, just facially, I could see it with Jack.
Right.
Quite a bit taller than young Ace, though. So that really puts the age difference in perspective versus how Ace is clearly taller than Jack when they're adults.
Yeah. I mean, we don't really get to see a whole lot of young Ace here. He's mostly just running around. But yeah, I didn't realize that the age difference was going to be that drastic.
Yeah, I thought this was a nice touch. It was nice to actually see a portrayal of a young Jack and young Ace. I actually wouldn't have minded a few more of these sprinkled throughout prior episodes because it kind of does help contextualize their relationship with their father a bit more, whereas I felt a little bit disconnected with their characters and Tom's character, who, as we see, yeah, maybe there were some signs back then for them that Tom is not this infallible father, this infallible person. And overall, it's just nice to see the character of Tom, though, be a presence on the show rather than just a picture on the wall or just kind of the shadow that they allude to. I mean, the first time we actually see him in live action is when he offs himself. So right. From there, it's just kind of like, oh, hi, character, bye, character. You know, we only hear about you in passing. So I liked this flashback. I mean, it wouldn't be a Stephen Amell show without flashbacks. Of course, that was a huge aspect of Arrow that people at first loved and then hated.
I think these flashbacks are also good because it gives some perspective to the brothers' relationship. Because you can tell that there was already a lot of existing tension between them before, you know, the screw job, but you never really know or understand any of that. So I think seeing that, like, Tom was kind of pitting them against each other a little bit.
As all father coaches do.
Like, you got to imagine that would just make Jack kind of really not like Ace. And he probably really didn't want to bring Ace into wrestling because here's Ace being more loved and being seen as better than him.
Right. And you get the sense that there probably weren't a whole lot of consequences for Ace's actions even back then, which definitely tracks for the Ace we see today in this show.
Right.
Which is the most frustrating thing about this show.
Right. Like, so here, Ace is Jim's baby's godfather. So he can't be like Jack and just, you know, skip out and not show up to the baptism. And he actually has to give a heartfelt speech as the godfather. But we know he's not really usually good at this because he has no heart. He's evil. But so he goes, he gives a little, it gives a speech. It's fine, I guess. But after the baptism, he's talking to Jim and Jim kind of encourages him to apologize to Bobby. This bothered me so much. From the way Ace injuring Bobby is actually spoken about to how easily Ace is forgiven is just so frustrating.
Number one, Jim just kind of casually mentioning this as if it was no big thing, as if he like pinched Bobby.
The language used, it's way too passive and it kind of puts the blame on Bobby. It's he got his leg broken.
Yeah.
He got fucked up. No, Ace broke his leg. Ace fucked him up. Language matters.
This is being spoken about way too casually
for
potentially ending or at least seriously jeopardizing a man's career who was just starting and doing it on purpose. It wasn't even an accident. It wasn't even like a careless accident. It was 100% on purpose. And for it to be discussed so casually and for Ace to use that language that, as you mentioned.
And Big Jim uses it too. They both talk like that.
Well, I think maybe Big Jim was just kind of, you know, razzing Ace for talking about it in the manner that he did, I don't think Big Jim just believes, oh yeah, he got his leg broke.
I don't know.
It wasn't a thing that you did. I mean, granted, he wasn't there, but he said he saw it. Or maybe he was there.
He could have been there.
He could have been in the crowd. We didn't see him. But Big Jim is a guy that should be taking Ace to task more, especially because they've been friends for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And if Ace is going to be the godfather of his child, does he want this man just behaving this way and just excusing this type of behavior?
No.
This is just absurd to me. Where are the consequences for Ace intentionally breaking Bobby's leg?
No.
You do not do that and get away with it, not in society and not in wrestling. Ace should be blackballed from wrestling. He shouldn't be booked by anyone going forward. He shouldn't be booked by Jack. He shouldn't be booked by Charlie Gully or any other promoter anywhere. He should be done. He would be this would be his career at this point. No one would want to work with him. He's unprofessional. He's dangerous. He's intentionally dangerous. But yet he's already here in the middle of this journey to redemption with this speech that he gives and these conversations that he's having, apologizing. And like, the weakest apology to Bobby, and Bobby just accepts it.
Because Bobby's just too good of a guy. He's just going to go with it. And he's like, you know, these things happen. I don't think he fully realizes that Ace did it on purpose.
Yeah. Bobby, this would be the time for you to show some backbone here. Do not forgive Ace for intentionally injuring you and jeopardizing your career. Come on.
Like, yeah.
This is the most frustrating thing about this. If this happened at the end of this season or maybe at the beginning of next season, I could see it being like a road to redemption for
you
Ace.
Yes.
The very next episode, though, I understand they only have 8 episodes. They have to expedite this type of storytelling. It is not warranted. Ace does not get his redemption this soon. It cannot happen and have anybody watching buy into this character and believe in this character and care about this character. It just feels like anything he does, he has a get out of jail free card at this point.
Any apology should have been accepted if we're going to be doing this in this season. It shouldn't have been accepted until the very end. There's been almost no growth. Jim talks to him a little bit. He's watching some home footage. But he doesn't really learn anything, not any more than he knew at the end of the last episode. There's really no growth. And, you know, he kind of apologizes to Crystal, too. I don't really think he said he was sorry. I remember him saying that he shouldn't have been mean to her and that she's special or whatever. But she apologizes to him, too. And this is just really bothering me. She doesn't necessarily accept the apology. She walks away, which is better than what Bobby did. But it's clear that everyone's just cool with what he did.
Well, this is the other part. This is the other part of what made this episode so frustrating for me. Why are they making Crystal so dumb when it comes to Ace, when she's so smart in every other situation?
Yeah, no, I think she feels guilty on some level, especially when you have someone like Willie who's blaming her and telling her that she started it. She probably already blamed herself, and this isn't going to make her feel any better. So, sure, apologize to Bobby, feel bad for Bobby, but why are we apologizing to Ace? She didn't do anything that bad. He started it in the first place by cutting her promo, getting rid of her as a valet. He's the one who keeps starting shit, not her.
Ace will continue to hurt people and somehow just get away scot-free and sometimes wind up with them apologizing to him, because that's the type of person that he is. And it's just really frustrating at this point to see Crystal going off in this direction of kind of still pining after Ace and still wanting his approval and still the way she looks at him. And it's just, it is not at all what I wanted to see as a viewer. And with Ace, what I want to see is him shut the fuck up and be humbled.
Yeah.
And work his way back and pay his dues if he wants to work in this business again and never, ever, ever be put in a situation where he can do what he did on that scale in the main event. You're setting up a title program and he just fucked everything up. He potentially drove away some fans. He potentially ended a man's career. He doesn't know how to do business. He doesn't know how to separate, as I said in the last episode, he doesn't know how to separate the in-ring from what happens in his real life. And until he learns that, he should not be allowed in a wrestling ring. No. And until he learns how to control his emotions, I don't care what Crystal said before the match. I don't care what he's on. I don't care. If you are that fragile that you could just at a moment's notice break the leg of someone who you're supposed to be cooperating with and protecting in there, because that's what wrestling is. You're cooperating with your opponent and you're protecting them. You're working together to put on a performance. Ace does not understand any of that.
He honestly, in that regard, he makes Wild Bill look like a saint, because there's, to our knowledge, no, you know, history of Wild Bill injuring people on purpose. Sure, he mentions, you know, getting some stiff shots in there occasionally to make it look real. But this is a whole completely different thing.
Well, you know, I don't think Wild Bill is any angel either. And I think he's probably taken liberties and hurt people as well. Maybe not to this extent, but we know one person that he's certainly hurt in his life is Willie. But what we learned in this episode is that that also goes both ways.
Yeah. So you have Willie here, who, of course, is still hurt by what Wild Bill said about her daughter. She doesn't want him at the fair. She doesn't want Jack to do business with him, which is funny because, you know, again, just a couple episodes ago, she was the one who was telling Jack to bring him in. But you have Bill, he corners her in the Duffy Dome office and he attempts to apologize, I guess, but he's not that great at it, probably because he's never really had to do it earnestly before.
Yeah, his go-to line is, "It wasn't right what I said." And he says it like 7 times rapid fire.
Yeah. But, you know, we do learn here that Bill was probably, you know, Willie says that he used to be kind, or she thought he used to be kind, but he reveals here that that all kind of stopped when Willie essentially dropped him for Tom. I guess before Bill left Duffy, Tom was actually the one being scouted. And without ever, you know, consulting Wild Bill, he and Willie decided, no, you're not going to be his valet anymore. You're going to be mine, because we're going to go to the top and we're going to leave him here. So, of course, this is going to lead to a lot of hurt feelings on, you know, everyone's part. And for 20 some years, no one talks about it.
And again, it's another thing that as we learn more about Tom Spade, you know, the less clean he becomes in everything, all of the goings on here. But I thought that Willie really showed a lot of strength of character here for owning up to her mistake, apologizing for it, even with how hurt she is by Wild Bill and what he said. And there's no excuse for what he said. And I thought that this was just a great scene between two great actors here. I thought Chris Bauer was just terrific as Wild Bill, adding new layers to his character. And for anyone who hasn't listened to his episode of Dropping Character with Robbie Ramos, Robbie Ramos' podcast, who plays Diego, it was just a fascinating insight into his process and kind of his influences for this character. And I thought that this was just a really my favorite performance from him thus far in the season. And Mary McCormick was just great as well here as Willie, and adding new layers to her character too. So a very strong character episode. This to me is when I think what happened in this episode, I think back to this scene because I thought this was some of the strongest stuff that we've gotten from a character perspective all season.
Yeah, I think this was probably my favorite part about the entire episode. You know, as much as I struggle with Ace and how Crystal and Bobby Pin are being treated, this, I think, is a scene that really does these two characters justice with Willie and Wild Bill. And, you know, there's the parallels, of course, to Ace and Crystal and everything that's going on with them. But this was so much better.
Willie and Wild Bill, their situation is really just that with like a few more decades of pain and regret and history. There's a lot there that I feel you see the parallels playing out in real time. It's not exactly one-to-one, but it's close enough to where you can really see how history repeats itself. It's the type of thing that I feel like, and I mentioned it in almost every episode, but I think Cobra Kai does so well, is where you see these generational rivalries kind of reformed in new ways and played out in different ways, but the parallels are so strong and it's just really interesting storytelling. And this is one of my favorite things that they've done so far on this show, is kind of pair these two and the way they've been telling the story in parallel. So Yeah, just great stuff here all around. And I have to think that at some point, Willie's daughter is going to be a little bit more important to the story, or there will be some sort of reveal there just based on what type of show this is, but also right. just based on just how important of a point she's been in the story between Wild Bill and Willie. You know, do we think that maybe she's their daughter? Is she the daughter of Willie and Tom, perhaps? I've seen that thrown around on the internet a little bit. I feel like it's all kind of in play at this point. Anything could be valid.
Yeah, I mean, my initial theory was that she's Wild Bill and Willie's daughter, just based on the connection that he seemed to weirdly have with her. But, you know, I don't know. Who knows who was cheating? We know Tom Spade is not a good dude.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all. This is kind of everything is trash on this show. Everything is trash and small town and southern, and I would not bat an eye if we found out. If there any sort of reveal that was made, I think it'd be hard to surprise me so far. Something that really didn't surprise me, though, in this episode was this meeting here between Charlie Gully and Rooster and how this all shakes out, with Charlie Gully doing his best to woo Rooster and even, you know, just flat out putting money on the table, figuratively, literally, trying to make Rooster feel wanted and like he can make him a star and like his audience would love him and that he would finally have the opportunities that he's wanted. And Rooster resists and resists and resists and then eventually has another conversation with Jack. And this is the part of the episode where I was like, okay, well, just fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Fuck off, Jack. Seriously. The way he treated Rooster here, anyone in this position, after going to the man who's booking you time and time again and just talking about your frustrations and what you really would like to do and how much you think you can offer, and you're just not getting anywhere. You're just in quicksand. And for him to just blow you off like this and act like, you know, we've had this conversation before. And as Rooster says, and every time it's a little bit different. That just said so much right there. And Jack can get all in a huff all he wants, but he is disrespecting Rooster. And this is the wrestling business.
Right.
This is not, I've seen some people on Twitter say, oh, Rooster is a backstabber and Rooster is this. No. Fuck all that. Rooster is a wrestler. He's a wrestler who, and his bills are not being paid just by the DWL. Wrestlers on the independent circuit, on the regional circuit, they work different promotions. They may work in a completely different part of the country, you know, on some days, and then come back and have a home promotion, but there is no loyalty here. Rooster does not have to be loyal to the DWL if the DWL is not doing shit for him.
Exactly. And it's not like the DWL is paying 24, like all of his bills. He's not full time in the DWL. He's, you know, working at the karaoke joint too. And if the goal of a professional wrestler is to simply be a professional wrestler and cut out all that other bullshit, then yeah, they are going to go to multiple promotions. We see Ricky Rabies doing that. He's not just sticking with one place. He comes down to Duffy when he needs some extra cash and Jack wants to boost ticket sales. This is how the independents work. It's not WWE.
Right. And I think that may be a disconnect for some people who don't understand, you know, the wrestling business. They don't come in with that background. And that's kind of another thing, as Ali J. Spade was mentioning, that this is an opportunity where we can also kind of inform those people of kind of why this isn't as big of a deal on Rooster's part, by why it's a huge deal on Jack's part, because he's about to lose someone who could be potentially his top guy. And he's about to lose him to his main competitor, who is allegedly going to push this guy to the moon. So this is a pretty big deal in that sense.
And Rooster's probably not just going to, you know, go do some shows with another promotion and still the DWL's his home. With how Jack is treating him, he's going to be gone, like just completely gone.
Right.
Why would you stay?
And with the type of guy Jack is, do you think that he would let him work for both companies?
Absolutely not.
No, this is a bitter feud between Gully and the DWL. So you got to think that once Rooster crosses that line, he may have like one opportunity to come back. But does he take it? Does he want to? I mean, for the sake of the show, he's probably going to wind up back in the DWL. But I think it'd be interesting to have a whole season of Rooster jumping ship and then maybe saying, hey, he has this great bond with the guys in the locker room saying, hey, Apocalypse, Diego, come with me. Come over here. It is better. I have more money. I'm being booked better. I'm in title programs. You know, I'm a star now. I'm a star in this territory, and I'm being booked in other promotions in California, in Chicago, in New York. I want to see that for Rooster. That is my hope. I hope Charlie Gulley is a man of his word. We know that he is a man of honor and a man of respect. Because as he mentions, he doesn't go to strip clubs because he respects women, which just makes me love the character even more than I already did.
Look, we got him previously talking about the environment. Now
climate change.
Now he's talking about his respect for women. You got to imagine that this guy takes care of his wrestlers.
Yeah. I love Charlie Gulley. I think Michael Malley is just incredible. He's my favorite character, I think, on the entire show for as little as we've gotten of him so far. I'm very excited about the next episode, but I would absolutely love for this not to play out the way everyone seems to think it's going to play out with Charlie Gulley. He was just taking Rooster for a ride and he booked him on one show and then he's going to job him out and, oh, you got to work your way up or, something will happen. I hope it is not that case because I would love it for them to kind of turn that on its ear. But I guess we'll see.
I think it will really, if Charlie Gulley's whole thing is just really sticking it to Jack, I think it will really just tear into him if he books Rooster as the top guy.
I want Rooster to come in night one, win the title, open challenge on the next show. He's just beaten everyone. Finally, everyone shows up. Apocalypse, Diego, and Bobby heals up. Bobby shows up. Leave Jack with nothing so that he actually has to book people well that don't have the last name Spade. And this is also the opportunity for dumbass Jack to lead on Crystal, the person who has no role currently. She's not anyone's valet. Bobby's out. He's injured. Who knows how long his recovery is going to take? She's not Ace's valet anymore. Put her on the creative team.
Or start booking more women. Venture out and start booking women. Because guess what? Like, I've seen people say this, that, you know, oh, well, the small town independent wrestling scene, there are no women wrestling. Have you ever
patently false.
That's incredibly false. Because I'm seeing people get really annoyed with this. The sexism that belongs in, you know, the 1980s, that seems like it's straight out of 1985. That's just so false.
It's false. I mean, there are a lot of indie shows where women will wrestle men.
Exactly.
Intergender wrestling is a thing on the independents, but women's divisions are not, like, you can go to any indie show and probably see
there'll be at least
women's
one
wrestling. In fact, there are entire promotions of women's wrestling. And I'm not just talking about something like GLOW. We're talking about actual serious promotions dedicated to women's wrestling. So in 2021, it is just an excuse to not have women on your show, that you only have one, I guess. You could book Crystal against anyone. You could book Crystal as an underdog. If Rey Mysterio can be credible against bigger guys, so could Crystal. You know, like Bobby says, maybe she does need to put on a little bit more muscle, but look at someone like Sasha Banks, who is very tiny.
Look at, you know, all of the women in Japan. There's so many incredibly small, you know, that some people would be like, they look like twigs.
They start at the age of 14.
And
yet they're these ferocious wrestlers who people buy into and love to come see. So yeah, it's just an excuse at this point. Jack really just has to get over it and realize what he has in Crystal, in a talent and in a booker. And she can be both. She can be both. Believe me, she can be both. With how many guys who have booked themselves on top while they're still active wrestlers and while they got the pencil in the promotion, she can be both. Believe me. Maybe she's a little young to handle both, but just give her a little bit of responsibility and she will show Jack that she's up for the task. Whereas him, it's just like getting blood from a stone, getting him to write these rigid scripts that they're not as good as when things are a little bit more natural and organic. And also, she just has a better mind for the business than anyone on this show.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it doesn't matter the legacy that Jack has. He's kind of dumb.
Yes.
He can't do it all on his own.
Yeah. The Spades, they do not have intelligence in spades. We'll leave it at that. But another thing that I really enjoyed about this episode as we wind down here was seeing Apocalypse and this kind of character development for him. We haven't gotten as much of Apocalypse in the past five episodes, but in this episode, we see him leading an AA meeting. Which is number one in the Duffy Dome, which is kind of like, okay, that's a choice there. But he's giving this really great speech.
Yeah, it's all about regrets and using them to become a better person, which is just so fitting for this episode because everybody has to deal with all of these regrets that they have from just even just the last episode. So it was really great to open with him and this speech. And it looks like he's leading these meetings. I wonder if he started them in the first place here in Duffy, because the idea of little small town Duffy having its own AA meeting, like where they don't have to travel to a slightly larger city, or it's like, you know, something like that. Duffy itself has it. So I wonder if he, you know, initiated that.
Right. I mean, why else would it be in the Duffy Dome, hosted by a wrestler who wrestles in the Duffy Dome? Probably that night he was wrestling in the Duffy Dome. But this is a really great character development piece for him. It's a nice insight into his character and who he is as a person. We also get a great conversation, as we mentioned before, in the locker room between Diego and Apocalypse and Bobby, and then Rooster comes in at the end, and you just kind of get the sense of, yeah, Rooster would really miss these guys. And the bond between Rooster and Apocalypse, that big hug that Apocalypse gives him at the end after Rooster insults them all. it's the type of thing that I really love to see. I wish we got more of those moments in the locker room with those guys. It's some of my favorite character stuff that we get. And, you know, you could take it out and maybe it doesn't make a whole bunch of difference to the main story of the Spades, but it's better for it being in there. And I actually like it better than the Spade stories. But speaking of Spade stories that I don't really like, Stacy. Yeah. Let's finish off with Stacy.
Yeah. Well, guess what? Stacy is feeling stuck again. This seems to be a thing that happens every other episode with her. She's fine, then she's not. She's fine, then she's not. So here again, she feels like she has no real identity, you know, outside of being the wife and mother. And she's struggling, really struggling with Jack's inability to give her and their son the time of the day, because they need more than just the exhausted version of him who's always on his phone and buying smoke machines. But this seems like a conversation that they've probably been having much longer than this show. They've been together this whole time. You got to imagine Jack's kind of been like this, you know, even before his dad died to some degree. It just seems kind of like his personality to just focus on these other things. But, you know, you have Jack, you know, acting like he's listening to her. I feel like there's always going to be a lot of empty promises. Will he do better? Probably not.
Is everyone with the last name Spade in this show just really fucking annoying?
Yeah. Pretty much.
I'm at this point, I can't do it. Even the second time we watched the episode, I actually had to ask you to fast forward through Stacy's little diatribe here. I just don't care. I'm just not that interested. I really, it's like, okay, you had to work at the grocery store and then you're working at the grocery store and now you're unremarkable. So, all right, go do something about it.
What did you go to college for? You know, there's a life outside of Duffy. You can live inside of Duffy, but it's kind of like you all do realize that you don't have to 24/7 be in this confined little town. You are allowed to just go outside the city borders and do things. Find a job over there. Go outside of Duffy.
I think
it's legal. I
think
swear.
It's the type of thing where she would kind of blame Jack as being her albatross and just kind of keeping her chained up in this yard of Duffy, this stupid town with stupid men and their stupid crap,
but again,
which I agree with. But yeah. At the same time, ugh,
but again,
do we got to do this every yeah. episode?
Well, this is what I mean. She's been with Jack for, you know, got to be like a decade. How old's Thomas?
Eight, something
like that. So where is she from? Surely she knew what she was getting into 10 years ago. Jack's this type of guy who's just got like tunnel vision when any, you know, when something with wrestling here, you know, this isn't new. She could have kept a job. Like, I don't care what Jack says. She can get a job.
She can just go do Star Search and get that out of her system. Get her very, very on the nose acoustic guitar songs. Get those out of her system. or go and do great things with that. Who knows? She could potentially just become a composer for shows like this that have these very on-the-nose acoustic guitar songs playing throughout the entire episode. I think that'll do it for kind of our breakdown of the episode. One thing that we didn't do while we were talking about him was you didn't give us the Wild style. Oh, what was Wild Bill wearing this episode? Give us the Wild Bill fashion report.
So this was kind of a casual look for him. He doesn't have any sunglasses. He's wearing a red beanie, which wasn't too exciting, but at least he had that pop of color. And he's got jeans and a denim button down with some nice little fun beading, little bead design work there. Again, really casual. I liked it. There's not a whole lot of flash, but if there was, it would really have messed up the scene that he was in, because he needed to be toned down for this. It felt right. So I give this look an 8 out of 10.
I thought that the no glasses look for Bill was, it made him look a bit more genuine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can really, really see the eye acting that he was doing, which is great. I don't remember what he wore, honestly.
It looked very Southern.
But yeah, I'm sure it did. And I'm sure it was great. Laura Bauer does a great job. So that is the Wild style for this week. And before we get out of here, as we mentioned, we have some more listener feedback about this episode in particular. And this message comes from @nerdmost on Twitter. Great episode, heavy on character development. A couple thoughts. Ace had a redemption in multiple parts. He spoke at the baptism and made peace with the entire community. He went to Bobby and apologized, and he even shared a moment with Crystal. When he got home, though, we saw him still reeling from the death/suicide of his father. There was also some not-so-subtle foreshadowing with that dead-end sign over his bed. And that's a great detail,
yeah,
because I notice that every time we are in Ace's bedroom, and it is so fitting. Also, we didn't talk about the ranch dressing. Bobby, what are you doing? Jeez Louise, that's a lot of ranch.
Is this what they do in Texas?
I don't know, but that's disgusting. Okay, so back to the feedback here. Wild Bill also had a redemption of sorts, but it was one that was only seen by Willie and the audience. Bill is basically a heel in real life, but after last week, he was a face in the ring with the crowd cheering him as he challenged Jack for the belt. What's interesting is that his apology to Willie made him sympathetic to the show's audience as well, and I think we are being set up for a major gut punch in the finale. I would bet on that as well. He and Jack are basically face and heel in the ring, but heel and face in life. Now that he has shown himself to be a vulnerable and empathetic character, I think Bill will meet a tragic accident inside the ring during the ladder match at the State Fair. Likely a combination of his age and Ace messing up a high spot or something. Then Willie will blame Jack for letting him even get in the ring because she's still in love with Bill. This is great stuff here. Notice that one scene with Bobby in his trailer alone. All his colorful lights on the trailer are dark, and he is just ruminating in the darkness inside. I think this is a look at Bobby's real current state. Bobby is not okay. He's telling Ace he's fine, they're all good, but really Bobby is feeling hurt, alone, and abandoned. I see bad things coming from this. And I agree, especially when he sees that Crystal is very much still not over Ace and is still kind of pining for him in that way. I completely agree. Great feedback. Lots to think about. What do you think? Anything stand out to you?
If Bill meets a tragic accident in the ring, I will have to meet a tragic accident.
Oh my God.
He's like,
I didn't know we were this invested.
I don't want anything bad to happen to him, but I can see something happening because of Ace. I think Ace is, again, not going to be able to control his emotions. Something's going to set him off again. And I can see Wild Bill getting hurt in the process.
Yeah, I feel like it opens up a Randy the Ram at the end of The Wrestler type of situation. But yeah, I mean, that's a lot to think about there. That's some pretty heavy stuff, especially with Bobby. I would hate to see kind of the darkness of Bobby, but it's necessary for character growth. He can't be the happy-go-lucky, innocent, sweet, genuine guy all the time. And yeah, he's going to have to come to some hard realizations here.
Well, you know, in this episode, we did hear Bobby mentioning his mom a couple times. I don't remember if they mentioned his dad. And we have been speculating over what's going on with that. So I got to wonder, you know, especially since his parents aren't around, we don't know if they're alive. We don't know what's going on with them. But being away from home, being in this position, yeah, it's got to be really, really isolating for him. At least he, you know, is still going to the Duffy Dome to hang out with the guys, and he's being invited to the baptism. So he's not being left out. So that's good. But I don't I don't want to see anything bad happen to him either.
Yeah, no, that would definitely be a gut punch. That would be the 1-2 punch there to end the season on. So now I'm very worried. Thank you.
I'm stressed.
Thank you for that. But no, thank you to at Nerdmost and at Ollie J. Spade for the great feedback. And again, we would love it. We would love to encourage everyone to write in feedback. Of course, we can't be here for 2 hours reading feedback, but you know, that would be a great problem to have. But we really, more than anything, just want to know what you guys think about this show. We love talking about it on Twitter or on Instagram. And again, our email address, if you do want to send some long form feedback, is pwrepackaged@gmail.com. And with that, I think that'll do it for this episode of Pro Wrestling Repackaged. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your feedback. And join us next time as we discuss Season 1, Episode 7 of Heels.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PWRepackaged and email us at PWRepackaged@gmail.com.
Subscribe on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or your favorite podcast app. And visit pwrepackaged.crd.co for links to everything.
If you'd like to support the show, please consider leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or any other platform that features reviews.
Pro Wrestling Repackaged is a Multitrack Minds production. Visit multitrackminds.com for projects and audio production services by yours truly.